As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Spinrate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. It is the beginning of the week, and we are glad to be back. My name is Drew Fairservice. I am one of the co-hosts of Spinrate, which we cover the Toronto Blue Jays at least once a week, but usually two. We're back to twice a week. We're back on our regular cadence because we're back, and we're glad to have her back. She covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, it's been a while. It would be a test of my skills and knowledge and memory to ask what we talked about the last time I was on this podcast, because I don't remember. It feels like it's been a while. I think in the time that I've been away, the Blue Jays have somewhat figured it out. They've been playing really well in September, and while not perfect, I think they've done enough to put themselves in a very good spot, which I'm sure we'll talk about this week.
We certainly will. As I mentioned, we talk about it twice a week here on The Athletic. Once a week, me and Caitlin usually do this as we're doing it right now. And once a week, it's me and Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays All-Star. And sometimes it's all three of us. You never really know. Make sure you subscribe to the show. Make sure you head over to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe to The Athletic as well, so you can get everything that Caitlin is going to write as we come down here, down the stretch, where the Blue Jays are currently sitting pretty. They are two games up in the wild card. There are 9 games left to play in the season. They have one remaining off day at the end of the series against the New York Yankees, which starts tonight here on Monday. But as Caitlin said, the Blue Jays have been playing pretty well. And because it's been a little while, because there's been some time to digest, but outside of the soup of the day news cycle that often we work in with you and I in our weekly conversations like this, maybe it's time to zoom out a little bit as we look at where the Blue Jays are. Their clinching a playoff spot is not an inevitability, but it's pretty close. I believe their magic number, such as it was, is 4. So they could technically clinch tomorrow, I believe, if all things go as they should.
I guess, yeah.
But that's a lot of moving parts. Let me ask you this, Caitlin. If we sat here in March and said the Blue Jays on September the 26th will be able to clinch a playoff spot this week at some point, they will have 86 wins, I believe, is their total right now. They will be playing 5,600 baseball. Would that season be a disappointment, or would that season be a success?
Like, the way that they're on pace now, like, they're probably on pace to get 91 wins, at least matching their total from last year, maybe getting 92, depending on how they play down the stretch here. So I would say it's a success. I mean, I know that they came into this season with very, very lofty expectations, wanting to be World Series favorites, winning the division, all this kind of stuff. It didn't work out that way. And I think maybe in some respects, the season hasn't gone as smoothly as possible. So it's felt a little bit of a disappointment. Maybe the way that Vlad hasn't followed up his breakout season last year with as good a season feels like a bit of a disappointment. I understand that there's elements of disappointment, but I think overall, like, if we're talking about baseball, which can be such a strange, unpredictable type of sport where things can go wrong, where injuries can happen, where teams can just get completely derailed for one way or another, the fact that the Blue Jays are still, like you said, not definitely going to make the playoffs in the sense of like they haven't made it yet, but certainly they're in a good spot and they sure seem like very, very likely to get into the playoffs in the next couple of days. I think it's a success because last year they didn't make it. Last year they played really well. They had a really talented team. They had the best offense in baseball, or one of the best offenses in baseball. They had the Cy Young winner. They had, you know, the second MVP on their team, and they had all these, and they didn't make it. And so that just tells you how tough it can be to make the playoffs in baseball. Obviously, they're expanded this year, and the Blue Jays have had more room for error to make it, but they're not. Well, I shouldn't say they're not. I guess they could get that third wildcard spot, but certainly it seems like they're in good shape to hold on to the first one, assuming that they play well enough and they maybe get a little help from Seattle and the Tampa in the sense of not playing out of their minds down the stretch. The Blue Jays are in good shape to hold on to that first wildcard spot. So I think, to me, it's a success because I really looked at the season as like, you got to get into the postseason. Now, I think it's an interesting question, and maybe this is something that I'll look at or ask, is like, is just getting into the playoffs and not really making any noise in the playoffs, like, will that feel like not success? I could hear that argument. You know, if they go to the wild card and get completely swept out of it, then I think making the postseason, well, a good step, would feel certainly very disappointing if they make no noise in the postseason. I think I kind of look at the season as like, you had to get in, and in that way, it will probably be a success. You've taken that step forward. But I do think this team has to make a little noise in the postseason for it to sort of feel like a successful season.
I think that's entirely fair. I think this season is a success, and I think that there have been a lot of folks who are either by their personal kind of inclination or the nature of the expectations kind of been waiting or looking for opportunities to kind of nail the Blue Jays for being not as dominant as they had been. You know, you use the word smooth. The season hasn't gone as smoothly, which is understandable. But I think it's really important to remember the context in which these Blue Jays exist. They're not the Dodgers and they're not the Astros. They're not in a division where they're alone. The Dodgers division is a joke. The Giants, don't let producer Brian hear this. The 2021 Giants are going to go down as one of the flukiest teams of all time. You know, obviously losing Buster Posey puts a big dent, and maybe having Buster bounce back makes that Giants team legit. But like, the Giants have fallen off significantly. The Rockies, the Padres are pretty good. But like, it's not the same as the American League East, right? It's not the same as a team that last year, a division that last year featured four 90-win teams. And this year is going to have four more teams that are going to win, you know, at least 85, 86 games, unless the Orioles fall flat on their face. The Red Sox are not good, but they're not as bad as the dregs in most of the other divisions.
They have elements of a good team there. They have a good offense.
And they play in a ballpark that they are built for and that no one likes. You know, you can go in and that ballpark can beat you almost on its own sometimes. The Blue Jays have turned that on its head this year. But the Blue Jays are in tough, and that they don't exist in a vacuum, I think is sometimes it's important to realize that, A, if you zoom in on any point in the season when things looked bad for the Blue Jays. The bullpen at different times has looked bad. There have been a lot of questions. There were questions about the starting rotation. There, you know, what's going on with this player, that player, this player, you know, at any given moment. But here we are with 9 games left in the season, whatever, 10 days to go. They have already won 86 games. They're on pace to win 90 easily. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll win one more. Maybe they'll win one fewer than last year. They have the best offense in the American League, the second best offense in all of baseball. It's a really good team, I guess is what I'm getting at. It's a really good team. The fact that Baltimore took such a huge step forward comes at the expense of some of those wins and some of those home runs and some of the stuff that happened last year. The fact that the Yankees played to like their 99th percentile for the first 3 months of the season, like all that stuff impacts the Blue Jays. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. The Yankees won some of those games against the Blue Jays. The Yankees raced out to a huge lead, which kind of put the division out of touch, which what I'm trying to get at right now is last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, Ricky and I and other folks we've been talking about on the radio, I'm sure when you go on, they do the same thing. Like, who would you rather play? And here I am after the Blue Jays split that series in Tampa. My thinking is this. I don't care who the Blue Jays play. The Blue Jays are going to be the favorite. They're going to be the favorite in the wild card. And I'm going to say something that I'm probably going to regret, which is that if the Blue Jays play the Yankees, the Blue Jays should be the favorite in that series.
Right. Well, they won't even play the Yankees until unless they get to the
whenever
ALCS.
They do. Whenever they, if they line up in a playoff series, if it's the ALDS, if it's ALCS, and the Yankees are on the other side, I'm going to say the Blue Jays should be the favorite in that series because they're a better team.
It would, the Yankees would have to be out of their minds. CS though, which is weird, and I think there's a flaw in the playoff structure, and I hope they change this for next year. Is that they don't realign the seeding, right? Like so, the 3 and 6. Matches up with the Yankees, I guess based on the assumption that you think the 3 seed is going to win, which is Cleveland. So you want 2-3 playing each other. But also, I mean, Cleveland has been playing well, so their win-loss record is actually better. There was a while there where it looked like the wild card teams would all have a better record than the central winner. I don't think it's going to end up that way, or it's probably going to be pretty close. But yeah, like I agree with you, what you're saying though. I think I do think the Blue Jays would have a tough time with Houston. I think they're a very complete team, but I still think it's probably more even than maybe people would give the Blue Jays credit for.
They caught Houston at the best time when the Blue Jays played those 2 series early in the year against Houston, when Houston was still figuring their way out, figuring their way through. They're a good team. But my larger point is I think the Blue Jays are better than the Yankees. I think that the Yankees played completely out of their mind for however long. But if you go back basically in the second half, like the Blue Jays have the third best record in the American League, you know, just behind Cleveland, who is playing in truly a truly terrible division full of teams that are losing on purpose or can't even help but trip over their own dicks, such to the point that Cleveland, who did not try in any way to win the division this year, have waltzed into the American Central Division. I think the Blue Jays are better than Tampa Bay, and that's something that Ricky and I talked about last night. And I think the Blue Jays are better than the Yankees. Like, the Yankees have a great record. The Yankees are a mile ahead in the division because I think there are always kind of these error bars and always, you know, lines of probability and things like that for any given outcome on the team. And for the first 3 months of the season, the Yankees hit yes on everything. They hit the 99th percentile on everything. You know, Aaron Judge is having the season of anyone's lifetime, right? Which you wouldn't have expected. You wouldn't say he's going to be a 10-win player. Right, going knocking on the door of being an 11-win player. If we looked up and Aaron Judge was a 7-win player at the end of the year, he'd still be due a huge payday, and the Yankees would still be pleased that if he hit 40 home runs and had a 1,000 OPS, that's still a monster season. He's gone so far above that. Nestor Cortez, on and on and on. I think the Blue Jays are better. The Blue Jays look the part of the better team almost every time they take the field. Sure, they might have a couple stumbles. They don't win every night. They're not going to. They're not the Dodgers, who are just like the class of baseball and a team that we'll probably remember years and years and years on. They're good. The Blue Jays are good. It doesn't seem like it should be a controversial opinion that this team that has a good payroll and a good foundation of young players is good. But in some ways, it feels like we're like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I think the other shoe to drop is the fact that the Blue Jays are going to be a forced to be reckoned with in the playoffs. They might, maybe they're not. Maybe they lose 2 of 3 to Tampa Bay at home. Maybe they fall in this last week and end up having to go to the Trop and nightmares ensue. I still would take my chances. I guess what I'm saying is I'm fully prepared right now to take my chances with this Blue Jays team. And I still think that if they get to the ALCS and they lose to the Yankees or whatever happens, or if they get to the World Series, that's a successful season. It would be great if they win. That's what they want. And I agree that for it to be classified as a successful season, they do need to have some success in the playoffs. Just getting in isn't enough. But they've gotten in. They're going to get in comfortably, truth be told, with a very good chance of hosting the wildcard games. That is the beginnings of a successful season. That's a successful regular season that that October can then undo on its own.
I think the Yankees' first half really skewed things in it. I think people are probably still living a little bit in that, like, the Blue Jays have underperformed because they didn't win the division or they're not even close to the Yankees, when really, as you pointed out, like, everything that could go right for the Yankees went absolutely right in the first half and almost beyond that. Not just going right, but, like, seeding. Like, everyone hit their ceiling, absolute ceiling, and obviously, Aaron Judge has blown through that ceiling and is just in a different universe at this point, the way he's been playing. Most of the other Yankees have kind of come down to earth a little bit. Their bullpen certainly doesn't look as scary as it once was. Their rotation, everyone's kind of fallen more to their career norms as opposed to sort of their absolute best. And I think the Blue Jays, for all their sort of like ups and downs, I feel like you mostly look up and down the roster, and with a few exceptions, I think most people have kind of performed how you wanted them to, maybe slightly below their absolute ceilings, but I think at the end of the year, we're going to look at everybody's numbers and think like, yeah, that's where they should be. Like, you know, maybe Alejandro Kirk overperformed a little bit based on what we expected of him. Maybe Vlad underperformed a little bit based on what we expected of him. I think the fact that Bo Bichette has had such an incredible September, he's really going to end the season right around where he was last year, quite honestly. A bit better in some regard, only because of the offensive environment this year, which was not as good as last year. But he's going to be right up there in the American League in terms of like hits, RBI. I think he's leading the team in RBI, doubles. He's just doing a lot of Bo Bichette things, thanks to this incredible month that he's had. Up and down the starting rotation, Alek Manoah, whether he met or exceeded expectations, I think Kevin Gausman was right where you want him. Berríos probably comes in under expectations a little bit, but, you know, Kikuchi also coming in under, but other guys sort of overperformed. I guess like what I'm saying is that I sort of think that when we pull back and we look at this season, I think it's right around maybe what we should have expected, with the exception of not winning the division. And I think that's only because of the way that the Yankees played. And the Blue Jays, I think they, you know, maybe famous last words, but I think they're a team that is well suited for the postseason. I think they have the right mix of, you know, talent, experience, confidence. Like, you know, I think that they have a good closer, which you're going to need. They have enough guys in the bullpen that are proven to be able to handle high leverage. They have 3 to 4 good starters, depending on which Berríos shows up, which is what you need for the postseason. They've obviously got an offense that can do a lot of damage. They have an offense that, unlike a team like Cleveland, for example, like the Jays have an offense that does damage, consistently does damage, and can score runs in bunches. And that's actually what you want to rely on the postseason, this team that can hit home runs, because home runs win you games in the postseason. The thing with Cleveland, which is like, they don't hit many home runs. And as you said, like, they're playing in a division where other teams just don't score. So like, they can just slap a bunch of singles together and they can get it done. But I mean, they have a really good pitching staff, so they're still, like, you know, not a team to totally disregard or anything. But I think the way the Blue Jays are built, like, I actually think they're a team well built for the postseason, where they have enough reliable power hitters that up and down that lineup, anyone can step up and hit a 3-run home run. And that goes, and not every team, I think, has the lineup to do that.
I think that the key kind of thing that I would jump on what you've said is the length of the Blue Jays lineup, right? The Blue Jays don't run out of good hitters once you get out of the top 3 or 4. If you're a fan of the team that doesn't watch the Blue Jays very often, you're going to see Matt Chapman come up, and you're going to see Teoscar Hernandez come up, and you're going to be like, who's this guy? In a way, right? Like, relatively speaking, if you're a team that's playing the Blue Jays and you get through, you know, Springer and Vlad, and then there's Bo, and then if you get through, or you get through Kirk, who everyone will know because of the All-Star game and because he's Kirk and he's kind of a singularity, but like, you still have so many other good hitters to get through, and Danny Jansen as well. You know, like, it's just, there's a lot of good hitters in the Blue Jays lineup. They are a walking big inning, which is the way that the game is played. And the stupid thing is, it's the way that the game has been played for like 30 years. But depending on who you talk to or who is in the broadcast booth, it's made to seem as though this is some kind of like bastardized version of the, like, this was, you know, Earl Weaver's whole thing, right? Like, you play for the big inning. The Blue Jays are built for the big inning. The Blue Jays are built to have a big inning at any point during the game, because there's guys who can take you deep. There are guys who can get on, and the Blue Jays are good about mixing and matching and putting guys, as you've heard me say a million times, putting guys into positions to succeed. And that's tough to play against. That's stressful on your starting pitching. That's stressful if you have to get into your bullpen early. When it's all systems go and like everything is geared towards winning a given game, if it's in the opening round, if they have just got to win 2, so then it's like, nobody, everybody's available. Everyone's is coming out of that bullpen, no matter what the situation is, if you need to get 2 to move on to get to the next round, which is, again, the way the game is played now, that it's just like anybody and everybody's coming out of that bullpen. If you need to get 6 outs, suddenly you might see somebody you don't expect to see coming out of there at the end of the game. So the Blue Jays are a tough matchup, I think, for all those teams. And they're in a good position to make the year feel a lot more successful than it might feel if you had it in your head that the Blue Jays were going to just stroll through the toughest division in baseball all the way to the wire-to-wire and then just waltz into the playoffs and just start stomping people. because you know, the thing that I've said, and I think it could still come too, right? There is still that Yankees April, May, June piece where, like, suddenly if everything clicks for the Blue Jays offense, and suddenly it's like you're no one's beating them. If Vlad continues to find his home run stroke and Teoscar Hernandez is like punishing mistakes 460 feet and Danny Jansen is doing what he does, like, they're not going to lose to anybody. Dodgers, they're not going to lose to anybody in the American League if the offense starts clicking and hitting home runs. Like, they're really, really tough. This is a Blue Jays podcast, so, like, you know, maybe you can call me a whatever you want, but
homer.
Like, I'm a homer, I'm an apologist, I'm on the Rogers payroll, but at the end of the day, they're a good team. They're a good team that's playing well. They're a good team that goes and, again, is in control of their destiny and handled that Tampa Bay series, taking 2 of 4 from Tampa this time, taking 3 of 5 from Tampa in the previous series. Like, I don't know what else you want, right? You know, you play Tampa 9 times, you win 5. Like, okay, take that every time. You're going on to the next round if you have to play Tampa in a real series. Like, okay, happily taking that and moving on, happily contending with the Orioles threat, happily, you know, going in and facing these Yankees when it's not that there's nothing to play for, but it'll be an interesting series if nothing else.
Yeah, obviously now we have, a week ago, Aaron Judge, I think, got to home run like 59 or something. Enough games ago that I was like, oh, there's no chance we're going to see him try and hit 61 and 62 in Toronto. Like, he'll get it done by then. But now, actually, we might. It's 61 that he's hit 60, right? So, yeah, so he's going for 61, which would tie the American League record, and then 62 would obviously be the new American League record. You're rolling your eyes and shaking your head, I think maybe because the American League record is still, like, 6 all time.
Why are we doing this? I know. Why are we doing this? I know why we're doing this.
Yeah, I think it's because of the uniform that he wears.
The home run record is 73, and then the record after that is 70, and then after that it's 66. Like, let's be real. That's the home run record. The fainting couches for the fact that the game was on Apple TV Plus, like,
which is why weren't people mad that it was on ESPN Baseball? Like, I understand because I heard the argument for, like, the Apple TV hard for some people to access. I get it. When the Blue Jays play Apple TV, I just tell my parents, sorry, I'll tell you what happened in the game. Like, I can't explain to them how to get Apple TV. It's just, it's too much. But then there was also the argument that, like, oh, well, we won't hear Michael Kay. We won't hear Michael Kay call it. Like, and that's a travesty. It was like, you know, Sunday Night Baseball is on ESPN and you're not, it's not the local broadcast either, but no one.
But that's because everybody unwittingly pays for ESPN as part of their cable bill.
But still, right? You're not hearing Michael Kay's voice if Aaron Judge hits it.
What are they talking about? A blessing in disguise. The other reason we know why they're like, I'm going to do some stuff that's probably gonna get me into some legal trouble here. But in the old days, there was a time not that long ago where if a player who was in a contract year, who was on the wrong side of 30, who was always hurt, had a career season breaking home run records out of nowhere, and he was all very, very healthy for the first time in like 5 years, that would arouse suspicion in the old days. I'm just putting that out there. That's the kind of thing that if you were, say, a guy who wasn't known as a big home run hitter and then hit home runs, that people would dog you as a steroid user for your whole career. You know, while they test now, what are they testing for? If I'm looking down the barrel of a $400 million paycheck, I can get the designer stuff. That's for sure. And they ain't ever going to find it.
You're going to get some angry Yankees tweets, I think.
Good. Let them come. Let them come with their garbled syntax and their Nestor Cortez profile pictures. Let them come. No, no one's going to say anything to me. My thing is, who cares? I don't care. Aaron Judge could be putting everything in the medicine cabinet in his body. I don't think that he is. He's a great hitter. He had 50 home runs like when he was, you know, in his second year in the league. This isn't truly out of character. But there was a time when, though, a lot of those kind of key indicators would flag suspicion. It doesn't anymore because the league did enough to win that PR battle, to rebrand and reposition itself as a game that with integrity. So cool. I'm all on board, but let's not forget that stuff when they start talking, when that bullshit real home run record starts, because you know it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Is it?
All those Nestor Forsy at, you know, whatever. Yeah, they're going to do it. 100%. It's going to happen. You're going to see it. And my thing with Yankee fans, I said this on Twitter, and I truly believe it, that Yankee fans aren't any dumber, any worse, any more obnoxious than any other fan base. There's just more of them. So they just become louder because there's so many.
I do think the 61 thing is kind of funny. Like, it's, I don't know. I guess let them have this. But like, I don't remember, and maybe I'm wrong in this, but I don't remember ever being that big of a deal about like the AL, especially individual AL records. Like, I couldn't even name like any significant AL records that have come down lately, if there any have. Like, I know there's certainly like fanfare when maybe a team is on a winning streak and there's like the AL winning streak, and then like the, so I understand maybe like that being significant, but in terms of like the AL record for any number of things, I don't really remember there being such fanfare.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
What's the National League record for the longest hitting streak, right? People know what is the longest hitting streak. I wonder why that is. What's the National League record for, you know, whatever. It's dumb. But again, shout out to Aaron Judge. He's going to get paid and he's going to have earned it, you know, 10 times over.
But look, now someone in Toronto might have a chance to make a lot of money if they catch that Aaron Judge home run.
And they're not wrong. There's a part of me that's like, whatever, it's not mine. This is the baseball. Here, Aaron Judge, you can have it. I mean, I like that Albert Pujols. He's like, it's worth more to you than it is to me. So, you know, keep it. Keep it and sell it. And I would never pay money for something like that. I'm not like a real collectibles kind of guy.
I would just ask for a lot of stuff from the team. Like, I think I would give the ball back because I don't really care. And I can't imagine wanting to go through the hassle of like trying to sell a ball, like all the things you would have to do. And I don't even know the process. I wouldn't want to do that. But I would certainly ask for a lot from the team. Like if I was a big Jays fan or something and I caught that Aaron Judge home run ball, I would ask for a ton of stuff from both the Yankees and the Blue Jays, season tickets next year. And like I would just try and ask for a ton of stuff and see what you could get. That would be my play.
it's worth more to some rich guy collector than it is to the team itself or the player, unless the player really wants it. I don't think that it would be that much of a hassle. The hardest hassle would be getting from your seat to the authenticator and then to safety. Get the ball authenticated and get the fuck out of there. And then you just hire like a broker, like you would if some relative of yours gave you like a valuable work of art. Like, here, broker, sell this for me. I'll give you 15% of whatever we get.
But see, I wouldn't know. Like, am I getting the best value for this? I wouldn't know who to trust.
Well, you put it up in an auction, right? It's just whatever they pay, they pay.
I know. But then I would think, did I not get enough? I don't know. Like, it would be so much paranoia for me that I wouldn't want to deal with it. So it's like, I don't know. I would just like, I think I would just want stuff like a signed jersey and like a signed bat and like, yeah, maybe some free tickets. You know, I would ask for a lot and then see what I can actually get.
You're helping me because I am not like a collector. I don't have sports stuff. I don't have Blue Jay stuff. I have my Ichiro Uno and that's about it. So I wouldn't want any of that stuff. Just give me the money. as this conversation is progressing, I'm getting greedier and greedier.
The team wouldn't pay much for the ball, would
I don't they? Want to give it to the team. I want to give it to the guy who owns, you know, six different gym. What's that, like really high-end gym? Like whatever, some guy that owns six of those fancy gyms in Manhattan, and or some guy who's like a partner in some white shoe law firm who loves the Yankees and has his whole life. Like, he's got the money. He wants it. He wants to have it in his office. So someone comes in and be like, you see this ball? This ball is Aaron Judge 62nd home run ball. That's the ball. Some bum on the Blue Jays threw that ball, landed in the seats at the Sky Dome. He doesn't talk like that. He's a lawyer. He's very rich and educated. But like, that's who I'm. I want his money. I don't want the team's money. I've come full circle, or 180. I've done a 180 on this now. Give me all you got. What's his name now? Eugene Furman. He's like the labor guy who's on Twitter. He's talking a lot about this stuff. He was like, don't give it to him. He's waiting. He's sitting on a $400 million paycheck. Don't give it to him. Get it. Sell it. Change your life. And I was like, I got you. You are right. Change your life.
I see that. I just think I would not want to. I wouldn't want the stress of it. I'd just, hey, Aaron Judge, give it to your parents.
Give it to your parents. You're gonna give. He's gonna give them a mansion off of Pebble Beach or something like that. Like they don't need the baseball. They got lots of those. I want to kind of circle back to a little bit of our zoom out and like that my arrogance that will in no way come back to haunt me. If you're sitting here, do you prefer the Blue Jays to face the Rays? Do you prefer, would you, in a perfect world, would you like to see the Blue Jays somehow face the Mariners? Or if everything turned upside down, how would you feel about the Blue Jays going to Cleveland to face the Guardians?
I would say, like you said earlier, that I think the Blue Jays have the upper hand in any of those series just because of the talent they have on the roster. Certainly on paper, I think they match up pretty well. All those teams have very good pitching. Cleveland has good pitching. I mean, all the teams do. I think at the present moment, the Mariners don't look so great right now. They have some injuries. They have some huge question marks. Whether they're gonna get it, like Julio Rodriguez back
in their offense. Suarez.
Yeah, and I think he's coming back this week. I heard, but he, you know, who knows how long it sort of takes him to get back into somewhat of a rhythm. Their offense isn't a deep offense to begin with, and without Julio Rodriguez, it really takes a steep drop down, as you've seen them going 3-7, I think, on this most recent road trip, and including that horrific loss yesterday to the Royals.
Oh,
I actually was watching that game because it came on right after the Jays game, and I was just had it on TV, and like it was like the sixth inning, I think, and they were ahead like 11-2, and they allowed 11 runs in an inning.
Can you imagine giving up an 11 spot to the Royals?
It was crazy, too, because it was one of those games where, like, the Royals were hitting some balls pretty hard. Like, Bobby Witt Jr. hit a ball that Kalenic, or is that how you say his name? I think
really cool. Kalenic, yeah.
Yeah, we will screw up his name. But anyway, he lost in the sun, but it was a well-hit ball to, you know, like, the right center field, I think. But then there was all these bloops that kept dropping. There was a ball that went off their third baseman. Like, he kind of, like, tried to grab it or tried to sort of, like, I don't know, snag it, but like it just bounced off him. There was like a couple bloops that kept dropping. It was one of those really wild innings where both like the Royals were hitting the ball well, but they were also getting like every single ball to drop, which is like that's actually how 11 run innings happen. Like they're usually a bit of like luck is on your side, or you're getting these like kind of cheapy hits paired with some bombs or whatever. So I don't know. I think they hit one home run. I think, yeah, they did hit only one home run.
A couple doubles. Bases loaded double, I think, as well, the Royals. I mean, think back to that Blue Jays when they scored 28 against Boston. They had, what, two balls that landed, like, directly in front of home plate, right?
They had an inside-the-park grand slam by Raimel Tapia.
Hey, man, you bring him up with the bases loaded. He's like Pat Tabler. He's like House of Dragons Pat Tabler. House of the Dragon, I should say.
But anyway, back to your original question, like, who they match up well against. I mean, I would take them against any of them. I think the Mariners at home, I kind of like, I mean, the Mariners as the road team in Toronto, I like that matchup for the Blue Jays. I think that that would be probably the preferable one. I think Tampa at home as well is a fine matchup. The Blue Jays have played really well at home, and the Tampa's actually been a really bad road team this year. They have a losing record on the road, I think. The funny thing about the Jays is they actually have quite a good record at home and on the road. Like, they're a very good road team. They've been an excellent road team in the second half. In fact, almost maybe been a better road team in the second half than a home team, but overall they've been a very good home team as well. So I kind of like the Blue Jays' chances regardless. Against Cleveland, I'm a little afraid of their pitching. They've got some good starters, like, you know, Bieber, McKenzie, and their bullpen's quite good. At least the back end of their bullpen's quite good. So while the Blue Jays shouldn't necessarily fear Cleveland's offense, I think that they still can be a tricky team to beat, and you would be playing in Cleveland. So I think if I had to choose, I would pick Mariners and then Rays and then Cleveland in terms of, like, order of which I would want to play these teams. I don't subscribe as much as other people to the Tropicana Field is a house of horrors. Like, I understand they've played badly there, but it's not like an automatic loss. Like, they can win there.
It's a loss in a lot of our heads, I think. Fans I was at a children's hockey tournament on the weekend, and we were talking about, one guy kept coming back to Whit Merrifield. Made some comments when he was interviewed after the game. I guess it was on Saturday night, and he was like, I don't know the other guys, but, like, I like coming here. You know, as a former Royal, he was like, this place is smaller than the Diamond I'm used to. I always, you know, the ballpark I'm used to. I've always played well here, which this hockey dad took as, like, almost a tacit endorsement of the fact that the Trop is in the Jays' heads as a building, as a place where the odds are against them. And I think they've played fine there this year. You know, there's nothing super sneaky about it. I think it can be a tough place to play, obviously, because for a variety of reasons. But if the Blue Jays do the things the Blue Jays need to do, they can win there, as we saw Saturday and Sunday, and we've seen there countless times this year. The question about the Rays being a bad road team is interesting to me, because I can't help but wonder if some of that, the way their team is built, is with that ballpark in mind. Like, that, the ballpark might be really well set up for them. The ability of, you know, to plug a guy like Jose Siri in there and have him, like, roam around and do Jose Siri things, where it's like, if the ball's over the fence, he can't really catch it. So they make the ballpark a little bit bigger. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that Cleveland's offense is not good, right? It's below average offense. They haven't scored a ton of runs. You know, they had a really, really dry. They've won, I think, 9 out of 10 or something like that, like 7 in a row when you and I are sitting here chatting now. But the preceding month to that, they were, like, one of the worst offenses in baseball. I was even looking, they lead the American League in runners in left on base. Like, they've stranded a lot of guys. But the thing that they do is put pressure on the defense, which I think at times the Blue Jays defense is not built to withstand pressure. You know, the Blue Jays defense has been much improved this year, right? It's much more efficient. They're really way better at turning outs, hits into balls in play into outs. And I think that that's a function of the way that they shift and the way that they move players around the outfield. But individually, in terms of, like, individual, you know, skilled defenders, other than the kind of specialists that lurk on the bench, only Matt Chapman, I would say, is, like, a standout defensive player. Right, like, he's very, very good. Vlad has come a long way.
Aspinall can be quite good as a defender. He's not an everyday player.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's very true. Aspinall, of course, is now here on the injured list and has been looking a little gassed, you know, at times this year. You know, Bo Bichette in on his own struggled defensively, as is well known. It's not necessarily worth bringing up again here today, but I think that there's and I don't, whether or not the Blue Jays are able to control the running game, you know, their pitchers don't necessarily do them any great favors. Alejandro Kirk is really good at framing the low strike, maybe not as great at throwing guys out.
Plus, they don't have a lot of swing and miss in their bullpen, which for a team that doesn't strike out a ton to begin with, like Cleveland, can be a bit tricky. Whereas like a team like the Rays, they have a lot of swing and miss in their game. So even against the Blue Jays relievers who don't typically strike a ton of guys out, but against the Rays they can because the Rays just strike out a lot. And I guess I have to look closer at the Mariners, but my guess is that the Mariners probably strike out, or they're not like a huge contact team, or I mean they don't have a great offense, so there's a flaw in there. I don't exactly know what it is because I haven't looked at the numbers lately. They haven't played in so long, so I had to refamiliarize myself with the Mariners. The Rays would be easier for me from a coverage standpoint because I know that team really well. But I think Cleveland would be really tricky. I think Cleveland, well, I think, again, like the Blue Jays offense is talented enough that I would still put my money on them. I would have a bad feeling about that series. I think that you also have like a sort of team that has that, it's almost like the Orioles were riding that like chip on their shoulder type mentality for a while. And you have Cleveland, they are winning the division, or they have won the division. So they can do everything right now just to set up for the postseason. They really don't have to worry. And the thing with like their position too is that like they're 100% the third seed. Like there's no way that they're going to move up, I don't think. And so they know what they're just waiting to see who they play. They don't have to play for anything at this point. So they can rest their relievers. They can line up their rotation as they want. They can rest some regulars to get everybody in peak form. Whereas the Jays are going to be playing probably till the last game, potentially for seeding. You would hope that they can get that settled before that last game of the year so that they can similarly line up their rotation in such a way that helps them for the postseason, but there's no guarantee. So that's why I would say, like, I don't love the Cleveland matchup just because of that going against the Jays, whereas Tampa and Seattle will be similar to the Jays in that, like, they're going to be playing down to the wire probably to get that seeding. So they're not going to have the luxury. I guess the one thing that also kind of scares you about the Rays is I think Tyler Glasnow is coming back. Now, they have lost some other pitchers, and I'm sort of skeptical about how healthy Shane McClanahan is. He's went on the IL. He had a decent start, although not a deep one, against Toronto. And then he left his other start early, and then he didn't look really great against the Blue Jays the other day. So I'm skeptical how healthy he is. But also, if they're getting Glasnow back, that's a huge sort of X factor for them.
Tyler Glasnow coming back is an absolute no from me. That is, like, I think that should not be allowed to happen. I would like to voice my opposition to that. If my voice has any weight in that conversation,
no adding to the postseason roster. So it's got to be cut off.
They can add anything they want. Don't add that gigantic goon throwing 102 with that ridiculous breaking ball.
Do the Blue Jays not hit him well? I feel like I have a memory of them actually handling him okay last year.
I don't think that's unfair to say.
I think they've actually been decent against him. Because I think the weird thing with the Rays was they actually hit Glasnow pretty well, but they couldn't hit like Yarbrough, and it was like, this makes no sense.
That's true. Okay, one more thing before we go. I'm going to ask you, this is going to be our, from now until the end of the season, this is going to be our temperature check. And that is, where on the Berríos-Stripling spectrum do you fall today?
Today? Well, probably I'm leaning more Stripling. It might depend on matchup. It might depend on where we're playing. But I think I can just better know what I'm getting out of Stripling. And I would rather go with the guy you kind of know what you're going to get with. I think especially in a postseason matchup. Like, postseason is all about like trying to map out the game. And I think with Berríos right now, there was such a difference between the sort of good Berríos, for lack of a better term, good Berríos and bad Berríos, that it's really hard to map out and plan for that game. Whereas I feel like the difference between like good and like bad Ross Stripling is like not that big of a difference. Like, he's been pretty steady and reliable, that even if you get like a Stripling who is not at his absolute best, you probably can still bank on getting 5 innings from him. Whereas like Berríos, like when he goes bad, he can't even get through like 2 innings. I think I would lean that way, even though I think that Berríos still has more upside, and I would have no issue going to Berríos in a longer series. Like, obviously in the DS, if they make it that far, like he's going to be a key part of that. But in a 3-game series, I kind of lean Stripling. I honestly, like, I wonder if they're going to get cute. Let's just take out of the scenario that, like, Manoah has to pitch the last game of the year, which I'm a bit skeptical that that's even going to happen, honestly, for home field, but whatever. They've put it out there. But let's just say they get home field and they can line up the rotation. I wonder if they're going to get cute and do something like Manoah game one, Stripling game two, Gausman game three, so that you kind of hope that you can win Manoah and Stripling and then you could save Gausman for game one of the DS. Or like, are they just going to go like, we need to get this done in two and go like Manoah, Gausman, and then if you have to use Stripling for game three, you have to use him, but you just hope you can win the first two and then you line up your DS such that it's like maybe Stripling starting it. And I have to look at the off days and how it all lines up, but I don't know. I could go either way because I know the Blue Jays have his history of sort of trying to get too cute in the postseason and being like, you know, you think we're going to start Ryu in game one, but we're actually going to start Robbie Ray as a opener and Matt Shoemaker and then Robbie Ray came in and it actually worked. They lost the game, but they didn't get killed. And then Ryu was terrible in his game two start. So whatever, what do we know? I'm just saying that they have a history of sort of like doing things that we're like, why are you guys doing this? We're like, wait and see. And then, you know, getting a little bit too cute, which can work and it can also backfire.
It's hard to argue. I think maybe in a short series, you like the idea. If you say you wanted to add some swing and miss to the bullpen, I think maybe you could do that with Jose Berríos in like a, let's lock this thing down now and put Jose Berríos in and for an inning and see how it goes.
It wouldn't surprise me if they go Alec Manoah game one, Gausman game two. Let's just say they then have to go to a game three. And then it's like all hands on deck game three and you're starting Ross Stripling, but then you're going like four innings with Ross Stripling, bringing in Berríos potentially and like trying to just like lock it down that way.
I don't think that's unfair to say. I definitely think that the way that the playoffs are structured this year, you'll need four. You'll need all four if you want to win the World Series. You're not going to be able to get away with permanently dumping one or the other one, which I mentioned to Ricky last week. And I'll ask you next week is where do you have a spot on your postseason roster for Mitch White?
Do you have a spot on your roster for Kikuchi? I think you might in the DS. I don't think you would in the wild card.
If they have to face Cleveland, you bring Japanese Andrew Miller to exact revenge on the real Andrew Miller who destroyed the Blue Jays 6 years ago. This is a whole can of worms that Ricky and I swear to God, have talked about 1,000 times. But we have another week before we can openly roster bait when we're looking ahead to the postseason roster. I would have to assume that by the next time that you and I, Caitlin, speak, the Blue Jays will have clinched a postseason position. We'll be talking about what that position might be, where they might go, and we'll get even more in depth on who they might play and how they might match up. It's great to have you back, Caitlin. I'm glad that you're well. I'm glad that you're here. And I'm sure that everyone who listens to Spin Rate is glad that you're back as well. So thank you for taking the time. Caitlin McGrath for joining me, Drew Fairservice, on this edition of Spin Rate. Thank you, everybody, for listening, for sticking with us. We're back twice a week between now and hopefully, I don't know, Christmas? When does the World Series end? Talking about your Toronto Blue Jays on this Toronto Blue Jays podcast called Spin Rate. We'll talk to you next time.